Committee on Transportation Economic Development. We have Bob Repine finally decided to walk in about 15 minutes late into the agenda. Appreciate the director's opportunity to come here and piss us out a little bit. For the members, you hopefully have had a chance to read through this a little bit beforehand. I know it was delivered to you and heard a lot of issues. We're going to ask LFO to go through the budget step by step. If there's questions, please ask them. We have the agency before us. If there's questions we need, we can ask them also, and then we'll hopefully be voting on the entire budget at the very, very end. We will not do a base budget and each individual policy option package. Any problems with that at all? Okay. Steph, you want to lead us through it, please?
No. Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, I'll be working from the work session document, which is in part of your packet, starting on page 5. The first program is energy weatherization programs. There are three small packages in this particular program area. These are largely technical adjustments, the first being package 090, which is reflecting savings anticipated from the Smart Buy purchasing initiative conducted by Department of Administrative Services. Package 104, the agency is implementing a new federal allocation plan, so they're recouping more of their administrative dollars through federal funds. And package 801 is reflecting PERS adjustments, a lower rate that's anticipated for all personal service packages. And that's it for energy and weatherization. Moving on to self-sufficiency and emergency assistance programs, package 070 is a revenue...
Page 7.
Is a revenue shortfall package. Agency is anticipating about $500,000 in lower revenue from low-income rental housing funds. So this is just a limitation of the excess limitation that they had on the books. Package 090 reflected the governor's proposal, again, for the Smart Buy initiative, but also had proposed a reduction of $838,000 to the statewide homeless assistance program. Per the Senate chair's plan, that reduction is being restored. So it's an add of $838,027. Package 010 establishes 11 positions that replace limited duration that had been approved and increases a part-time position to half-time. This is for the continuation of HUD contract administration. In the joint subcommittee, we had quite a bit of discussion about the work that that agency was doing. That contract has been extended for an additional 10 years, so it seems appropriate to continue those as permanent positions rather than re-upping them as limited duration. It also establishes two permanent FTE to support emergency assistance programs. The only adjustment LFO is recommending is for the PERS rate. Package 104, again, you're going to see 104 in every program unit. It's the federal cost allocation realignment, and it's being adjusted for the PERS rate. Package 801, again, you're going to see in every program unit. It's making the PERS rate adjustment to all the base positions. In this particular package, it's also making two technical adjustments that were errors made when dividing the one agency budget into five program areas. Package 811 is eliminating the federal authorization and positions for housing opportunities for persons with AIDS. This particular grant from the feds has three or four components. Housing and Department of Human Services had been sharing this program in a review. They've determined that it would be best administered by Department of Human Services. So this is actually not a program elimination statewide. It's simply shuffling the program over to Department of Human Services. So the positions are going away out of this budget. And that's it for self-sufficiency and emergency assistance. Moving on to page 10, community capacity building programs. Again, the three standard technical adjustments for Smart Buy, the federal cost allocation, and PERS. Moving on to page 12, homeownership and rental housing. Package 090, again, the Smart Buy initiative measures were in here. The other piece had included the governor's proposal to eliminate $250,000 from the homeownership assistance program that did some down payment and home buying training programs. Per the chair's plan, that money is being restored at $250,000. And you will see there that the general fund is transferred and is spent as other funds. That's why you're seeing both a $250,000 increase in general fund and other funds. Package 101 is establishing a permanent architect position. Again, this is in support of the HUD contract administration, as well as some consolidated funding cycle project review. LFO is recommending, again, the PERS adjustments. Package 102, establishing three permanent positions, replacing limited duration to support property management and compliance, and establishing two and a half FTE, and reclassifying one to address the workload in the home program and weatherization grants. LFO is recommending approval with the PERS adjustment. Package 103, you probably recall the discussion when the treasurer's office was here on the use of variable demand rate debts and the interesting things that they're doing to get lower prices out to folks and get loans in place. This is asking for additional limitation for the liquidity provider. The agency has reestimated the total amount of bond issuance. That's why we're making a reduction here of $234,000 to have them move forward and continue using that instrument. Package 104, again, realigning federal cost allocation. We also made a technical adjustment in this package. When the governor's budget came forward, it had overstated federal funds by almost $86,000, so we're just taking that off the books. Package 801 is, again, the PERS reduction, as well as recognizing a technical adjustment of some general fund. Would note that a program representative position that had been phased in to support the American Dream down payment, LFO is recommending that position be as limited duration only. The federal money is only approved through 2007. Package 812, there was discussion again during the joint committee about the takeout and reserves that this agency maintains to support administration. Again, in looking at their latest cash flow forecast from their financial advisors, we're expecting them to actually receive less revenue at this point. So this is reflecting fewer expenditures for cash that they will not have.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. I just had a couple questions. Maybe the director could come up to the table there if he doesn't mind. Appreciate him doing that. Didn't want to make him just sit there.
We'll start with you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if I'll have the answer.
I was hoping on the two packages, well, certainly at least the one package, 102, and maybe I don't understand 103 that well. Anyone can come up that feels like you want to get up and stretch your legs a little bit. That's fine.
Well, it's the old theory. I'm going to sit here. By gosh, they're going to sit here, too.
Yeah, that's fair. With the performance-based budgeting we're trying to do this session, I'm really trying to encourage all the agencies and our members to focus on the policy option packages that are being requested and link those to at least some specific outputs that we can, point to as successes next session, and then ultimately over time lead us, in some cases directly, some cases a little more indirectly, to the improved outcome measures that you've got listed. So the question is on package 102, what sort of decrease in the backlog are you anticipating, and how is that going to drive down or improve some of the targets that you're shooting for in your performance outcomes? And you don't have to have a specific answer, I guess, right now, but I just would like that certainly taken into account. And as we come back to next session, you'll be able to say, Senator Verger, we had package 103 last time, as you remember, and our original target was X. Because you approved that target or that package, our target is now better than that, and we were able to be successful. And same thing for package 103, although I think I might misunderstand 103. Maybe it does not lend itself to that.
You're our performance man.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Rick Crager, Chief Financial Officer for the Department. In terms of your questions related to the policy packages, specifically to the performance measure, on 102 is our affordable housing and strong communities policy package. We have established, if you look in our performance measurements already, in terms of what we're able to deliver in terms of affordable housing. That was one of the areas that we really focused on. What income levels were we able to achieve? So, to address the theme of what we are doing in that particular policy package, our performance measurements are already in place. I think what you're looking at specifically is in terms of perhaps the positions that we are requesting and performance measurements tied specifically to those?
Just no, not at all. Which performance measure do you think this package matches up with is what I'm asking.
On page, and referring to the last page, that would be, excuse me, performance measures numbers 1, 2, 4, and 7.
Okay, and if I'm looking at, that's a little grandiose, but let's just pick, let's pick 4. The percentage of housing units still up through the issuance of tax-exempt bonds provide affordable housing rental opportunities. I don't know if this directly applies to that, but what I was shooting for, your target now is 88. If we approve this package, what will your target be?
Well, our target will continue to be 88%. In this
so why would case. I give you the money to do this if it's not going to change the outcome?
Mr. Chairman, that's a good question. Currently, that particular package is restoring positions that are already in our budget to enable us to obtain that 88%. So by approving this package, we would be able to maintain that performance measurement. Okay. If you were not to approve that package, then we would have to, as an agency, reevaluate that performance measurement and see if we're still able to deliver at that particular level.
That's all I ask. So that's good. That's the type of discussion I guess I would hope we'd have at least some awareness of.
Mr. Chairman, just in the earlier meeting we had this morning, staff, and maybe Monica can share this with, we were at one budget packet. Everything was kind of into one topic. We've divided ourselves into 5 different sections now, mm-hmm. of which now you're seeing kind of the displacement of those people being assigned in the right location. So it might appear on the surface that we're adding people or, you know, putting people in place, but in fact they've always been there. We just assigned them to the right role of their of our budgeting packaging process now.
I guess I'd have to ask LFO if they agreed with that analysis.
In the package that we were discussing, they are converting limited duration positions to permanent.
Okay. So those were there. So that's fine. So then the goal here would be next session, we'd be looking at those goal, that 1, 2, 4, and 7 or whatever, and be able to say, yeah, hey, you know, thank goodness we funded package 1 or 2, and looks like we're getting pretty close, or we did better here, or better there. Right. That would be the conversation we hope we'd have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, just so you know, we've been actually building on this performance-based outcomes for the last two strategic plans, which make it 4 years now. So we're right on mark with where we want to be with that.
Well, I like how you've matched them up. I mean, the headings for the packages actually make sense to mm-hmm. Joe Sixpack like me that I can understand it. Could you explain package 103 a little bit more?
Sure.
I didn't have the benefit of the discussion that committee. I apologize. About
Mr. Chairman, package 103 is related to our issuance of variable rate demand obligations. And the department started in 2003, 2005, issuing variable rate debt as opposed to the fixed rate. And the reason, obviously, is with the low interest rates we've been able to achieve through the tax-exempt market, we utilize that small portion of variable rate to blend with our fixed rate debt to be able to bring down a lower cost of loans for low-income Oregonians. So basically, without the variable rate debt, we wouldn't be able to achieve the low rates that are necessary to provide the program. The reason that we need dollars for this particular program is that when you issue variable rate debt, you need some assurances that debt is always going to be liquid. In other words, when I issue fixed rate debt, you as a bondholder, you get that bond and you can trade that on the open market. If I give you a variable rate demand obligation, you have the right to tender that at any point. If rates go bad on you, you may decide, I don't want this anymore. Well, you get your money back, but we need assurances that is going to land in another place. So an underwriter will take your demand obligation, try to place it. If they're unable to place it, a liquidity provider comes in and assures us they're going to buy that. Now, that doesn't come without a cost. So this package is providing the dollars necessary to fund a personal service contract with a liquidity provider that would be there for us in case the underwriter is unable to, or I should say the remarketing agent, is unable to place that bond.
So the goal of the program is to be able to buy down the interest rate so you can make more loans.
Correct.
So you'll be able to show, is this a new program?
Relatively new.
So then next session, I would assume for package 103, you come back and say, because of what you allowed us to do last, you know, biennium, we've been able to make this many more loans to this many more people at such better rate.
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's correct. And one of the recommendations that Monica is making on performance measurements is to show output-based performance measure. In other words, how many loans did you do? We, as an agency, are targeting higher volumes of loans. We need to rebuild our portfolio from the last few years where we've suffered from a high volume of prepayments. In order to do that, we need this type of program to make it happen. So to answer your question, absolutely, we will come back and be able to demonstrate that we're attempting to do more loans and get those out there, more than the 1,300 that we normally would do.
And again, those outputs will hopefully yield to the outcomes that you've listed here and mentioned before. So.
Mr. Chairman, again, variable rates is a relatively new commodity for us to be working in. It has a different set of risks, as Mr. Krieger alluded to. So if one would think about this as almost like a reinsurance to protect us so that if we're successful at doing what we're pretty sure we can do in variable rate loans, we'll be able to improve our interest rates, which will make more money available to developing more housing at a lower income rate for rentals and or for sale for single family homes too. So it's a good leveraging commodity, but we want to make sure that we have our stuff covered on the backside without leaving our stuff risk inherent with this project.
I'd encourage you next session to bring your successes forward.
Senator Wesley? I understand the liquidity issue. I think that's obviously wise and prudent. But in terms of your variable rate loans, I assume you have a portfolio of those, and there's different terms to those loans. I mean, is there an average term to that portfolio? Is that an inaccurate characterization of the numerous variable rate loans you've got?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westland, the way it works with our program is that we don't do any variable rate loans. And from an administration standpoint, it's too difficult. We issue variable rate debt, and basically we're able to do fixed rate loans. And it's the way we're able to do that is that we do some stress tests related to where can you be as a fixed rate loan in order to be able to maintain that variable rate debt. Another part of all of this, and we haven't talked about, is our ability to swap out of that variable rate bond. Last session, the legislature was able to put in a financial tool that would enable us to do interest rate swaps. So that hedges us against that variable rate risk.
Never mind. Got it.
Find more information we're ever going to understand or know. That's good. That's good. This is a very creative agency in a positive sense, which I appreciate.
Most of the time.
We didn't even get into
it.
We don't even get into
We didn't even get into talking about low floaters.
No, we
don't.
Any other questions from the committee?
I have a question.
Senator Berger.
I don't have a voice. So I'll tell you and you ask it. I want to know about this 101 package. What did they do before? They didn't have a permanent architect on board.
Did you hear the question?
Yes, we actually were very familiar with that question. We heard it actually earlier. The House Committee asked the same question. Two things, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, Bob Repine, Director of Oregon Housing Community Services. The position for the additional architect, currently that architect works in a limited duration position for us. So he, in fact, is a limited duration person right now. With our HUD program that we have that Monica mentioned earlier, where it's been moved from a shorter-term contract with the federal government, it's gone to a 10-year contract, his salary is paid through those resources that we receive from the HUD contract work that we do on their projects. We believe in the marketplace we're in today, having this architect along with our other architect in place are vital for a couple reasons. One is it upfront helps our partners who are eventually our customers to be able to assist them in pre-design concept thinking before they go out and entertain architects to design new buildings or assess designing existing buildings. So it allows us to have somebody on board that can
enter into that discussion earlier.
As opposed to not having somebody at all, which means that they do the best they can with the architectural standards we set. But our experience has been that architects are architects, and standards are only applicable as much as they're willing to enforce them. And so you get sometimes products that come into our agency that one would even suspect whether or not there ever was any opportunity for them to have looked at our standards that we've developed. So having our own architect on board helps bridge that informational void between our partners and their architect. So you have architect talking to architect. We used to do this in a contract basis before I came to the agency, so let's say closer to 8 to 10 years ago. And the problems we ran into that relationship was that because it was on a contract basis, we did not have the same ability to control the activities with certainty for our partners. And if you think of this agency as a fiduciary financial agency, partners, and you know, I hope you have an appreciation for this, when you come to us and say you want to borrow money, we like to be able to respond to you with all the tests that we have to put you through, everything from the financial test to the architectural test. With two architects who currently carry probably a portfolio caseload of about 40 projects each today, everything from new construction, redesign, and reviewing current developments that need some architectural assessments, to have them there so we can get a timely response to them, so we can get our timely response to our customers, is money to them. And so we didn't have that opportunity when we were contracting out before. The kind of the information got to us whenever the person could get to it, and it wasn't a good environment for our customer relation building. So having two architects that we have, we're able to utilize them very effectively with our HUD contract work, which is a requirement, and also utilize them in this gentleman's case, in his other time, when he has time available, to do plan review, plan checking, and getting any kind of feedback to our partners to make sure that the submittal of their drawings will have less rocky roads ahead of them, as opposed to finding out we just decided to throw a curve at them in the 12th hour. So that's, and quite frankly, and just another point, I brought it up the other committee meeting. For the price what we pay, what we get out of these architects, just to give you an example, we went out to an architectural bid on a project that we're doing in the state of Oregon right now. For one set of drawings, for one project, 18 units, it cost the drawing set for the full-blown architectural involvement from beginning to end is $200,000. The salary is far less than under that, and we get a lot more mileage out of this gentleman than we do with the other individual we're spending $200,000 out of.
So before I go to Senator John, the short answer is this is an LD position. It's now permanent. The reason it's permanent is we got this contract for 10 years. It's likely he's going to be around for a while.
Correct.
At a lot less money.
Senator Johnson.
Your comment, Director Repine, just caused me to ask this question. I understand the concept of a community aesthetic and that you would want to be building buildings that fit the site and all the rest of that. But to the degree that you could have standard shelf plans so that you weren't employing architectural services, but you had three plans that could work on the flat site, the hill. The point I'm trying to make is to standardize the plans as much as possible to reduce this professional services overhead.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, great question. We have a set of standardized requirements for design based around minimum size of square footage of units, designs of space, best practices, I would say to you, would be the best way to describe best practices of how to get your kitchen and your bathroom laid out to your other space so you're not having to have people walk through your bedroom to get to the bathroom if they're visiting your unit. So we do make those comments, and those parameters are laid out in our architectural guidelines. I think your comment is actually very succinct, because the problem we run into is two things. Every site's a little different. Every jurisdiction, in many cases, has their own little thing that they want. So we have to end up start customizing there. And then you have to deal with the whole cultural involvement of professional architects who have to have their name on something, which means that they are going to do it their way, despite sometimes the best advice we might give them. So we try to minimize, make that available as much as possible. There are partners, I can tell you, Senator, that have used many times duplicative floor plans over and over again. And so and that makes our job and their job so much easier. Sometimes you have people who just for creativity's sake want to create something different, and we have to almost rein them back into saying, you know, the old plan idea is a good plan idea. Don't get so creative. But other constraints could change that for us.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I'd almost have more units and less flashy architectural aesthetic if there could be cookie-cutter plans for certain sites. And I don't mean to use cookie-cutter in a pejorative way. I frequently wondered whether or not if we had a standard set of school plans that a school would look this way on the coast, this way in Central Oregon, this way in Eastern Oregon, and you just took plan A, B, or C, and we cut out $1 million worth of architectural funds.
Senator Johnson, if I might just add to that, Jack Kenny, Deputy Director, when I review or when I'm working with the architects on a lot of the work that they do, and then adding on to the earlier question, there are 6,000 new units that were added from the HUD portfolio that this position supports. A lot of the work has to do with HUD safety standards. So, for example, there'd be one in the I looked at recently in the Southern Willamette Valley, where there was actually a balcony unit that was beginning over 30 years. A lot of these projects are old, was beginning to give, and we wanted to make sure that the safety of the residents was secured. So the architect might come in, and rather than just your standard, what you think of that an architect does as far as designing a building, a lot of it is looking at that, and also on rehabilitation.
Sure.
Something already could be.
I'm not disputing the package at all. I'm just trying to figure out how do you get more people with roofs over their head and fewer artistic flights of fancy.
Good point.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. I'll continue.
Okay. I think we had finished up home ownership and rental housing, so moving on to program outreach and accountability on page 15. Again, a lot of the same packages that you've seen in other program areas repeated here. For smart buy, the package 101 would establish two information systems specialists replacing limited durations to support the continuation of the HUD contract. LFO is recommending that those be retained as limited duration. This agency is one of the 12 that would be part of the CNIC consolidation database consolidation piece. So we could take another look at that in the 07-09. So recommending that with those two modifications for PERS and retaining limited duration status. Again, the federal cost allocation realignments, technical adjustments for PERS, package 811. This is a final piece in the admin section for the transfer of housing opportunities for people with AIDS to DHS. And again, finally, package 812, further reduction in limitation because of lower revenues anticipated out of the housing finance fund. I think, Mr. Chair, that is the total of the number of recommendations. If you want to move and talk about performance measures as they relate to policy packages, we can certainly do that.
Let's do that if the members are okay. We'll move to the performance measures, get some discussion on those, and then we'll approve the budget total, and then we'll go to the emergency measures.
So performance measures are the last page of the packet. Recommendations that LFO had made during the joint subcommittee. Overall, I got the impression that members were happy with most of the measures that were there and that things were being managed fairly well. A couple of additions you can see at the bottom there is for them to develop a measure or multiple measures relating to the hunger and food programs and get to some outcome measures there and report into the Joint Legislative Audit Committee by August of 2006. And as was mentioned earlier, modifying performance measures 1 through 5 and number 7 to actually reflect the number of individuals or units served in addition to the percentage that's reflected in the measures now. I'm also going to hand out a spreadsheet that the agency had prepared on the add-back that's proposed in the chair's plan for state homeless assistance as well as the training program. It was talking about the number of people served. The agency's recalling that spreadsheet. I have extra copies if you didn't bring one. So I'll just give that to you for your reference when you want to talk about what can you expect if the proposal is approved.
Okay. discussion by members on the performance measures? I lean heavily on you all, since I did not partake in that discussion, although I did review them.
I think we had a good, robust discussion in committee. I thought we vetted these pretty well.
I was just going to say the same thing. I agree.
I assume over time the targets will increase or decrease as is appropriate.
Correct. I think that's why we use the percentages, because if funding would change, we could still shoot for the same targets, but we're happy to add the numbers.
Okay.
I think that's one of, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
I think that's one of the good things about these performance measures, so that you can track year over year individuals served. We talked about these pretty thoughtfully, I think.
Good. Yeah. Well, seeing no objection, I guess, to the no objections raised anyway so far to the budget or to the performance measures, the chair would entertain a motion to approve the budget and the performance measures.
Chair.
The LFO first. Sorry, he misspoke.
Mr. Chair, because of the way I have the amendments drafted, I think we need to do the 0305 limitation requests before you move them, the adoption of amendments.
Okay, I'll reframe my motion then. If there's no objection to the base budget and the performance measures, we'll have them tentatively approve, but not the total budget yet per our supplemental. So ordered.
Do you need to hear from BAM, Mr. Chair?
No, Satish's reading the newspaper.
Yeah.
I don't want to disturb him, man.
Yeah, I think we woke him up. We apologize.
Mr. Chair, and to Senator Westland's question, BAM is aware of these, and I think they're happy.
I've seen him. Can't read me, raise his eyes.
Before you today.
I'm just kidding. Satish is a very good analyst. He does a tremendous job.
For your consideration today, Mr. Chair and members, there are two requests for 2003-05 supplemental expenditure limitations. There are letters that were distributed in the packet describing those in more detail. The first is for 30,000 lottery funds. This appears to have been a simple mathematical error when we established the current biennium's debt service limitation. The lottery allocation cash is correct, and the agency did receive the money and made the payment, so no problem there. This is an accounting issue, so they can record the payment of the debt. So LFO is recommending approval of that. The second piece is for an additional $6.5 million in federal funds. There were three grants that are coming in at higher than original projection for the allocation to the state. A portion of the dollars will be used for administrative costs. As is reflected in Package 104 in the 0507 proposal, the agency is proposing to shift more admin dollars to federal costs, and so this is consistent with that plan. And a like amount has been unscheduled in other funds in the current biennium for the agency's budget, so LFO is recommending approval of that as well.
Any questions or concerns?
No. You need a motion, Mr. Chair?
Well, we'll ask it out of deference. We'll ask Satish if BAM has any problems with any of the items discussed so far.
Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, Satish Upadhyay with the Department of Administrative Services. Based on input from the agency, BAM does not have any problems with any of LFO's recommendations.
Very good.
He could have said yes or no, Mr. Chair.
Well, he put his name on the record, did the right thing.
No, but in answering the question, he identified himself and then, no.
He was much more eloquent than I.
Yeah, he confused me, but in all of it.
The motion's welcome.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Westland.
To the full, or to the Senate Budget Committee, I move the LFO recommendation to Senate Bill 5579, including the performance measures and the emergency action of $30,000 lottery fund and the additional expenditure limitation of $6.5 million federal funds.
Thank you very much. You heard the motion. Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Good work today, committee.
And then move to the poll.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's true.
No. I moved it to the Senate.
Oh, sorry. I heard adoption of amendment. Okay.
No, you did it all. It's like the previous committee.
I speak in few words, unlike
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Rector, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Just some clarification, since this is a relatively new process we're working through right now.
Didn't ask this question this morning, so I thought, what the heck, I'll answer it at the Senate. There are some substantive bills that have been referred to Ways and Means also, a series of them, some directly related to our budgeting issues, some of them just related to just some of the policy issues that we discussed in the agency. Does the chair have any idea where in the process those will manifest themselves once again, so we can usually they are companion pieces or get kicked out at the same time the budget does. So I'm just trying to figure out what's going to go on. Sir.
Yes. Well, I think what we'd have to do is have a conversation about which of those Senate bills over which we have some control or maximum interest and involvement with, particularly your budget, and have a discussion with the Senate President and others about the advisability and timing of getting those particular bills out.
Okay.
Yeah. If there's no further business, we will stand adjourned. Thank you very much for your help.
Carrier.
Carrier.